circle above them, descending lower and lower with each turn, their fur radiating blue-white in the moonlight. Tass clasped his hands together. Never in his wildest Kender imagination had he dreamed of flying. This was worth fighting all the Draconians on Kryn. The Pegasi dipped to the ground, their feathery wings creating a wind that tossed the tree branches and laid the grass flat. A large Pegasus with wings that touched the ground when he walked bowed reverently to the Forest Master. His bearing was proud and noble. Each of the other beautiful creatures bowed in turn.
"You have summoned us?"
the leader asked the Forest Master.
"These guests of mine have urgent business to the east. I bid you bear them with the swiftness of the winds across the East Wall Mountains."
The Pegasus regarded the companions with astonishment. He walked with stately mien over to stare first at one, then another. When Tass raised his hand to pet the steed's nose, both of the animal's ears swiveled forward, and he reared his great head back. But when he got to Flint, he snorted in disgust and turned to the Forest Master.
"A Kender? Humans? And a dwarf? Don't do me any favors, horse!" Flint sneezed.
The Forest Master merely nodded and smiled. The Pegasus bowed in reluctant assent.
"Very well, Master,"
he replied. With powerful grace, he walked over to Gold Moon and started to bend his foreleg, dipping low before her to assist her in mounting.
"No, do not kneel, noble animal," she said. "I have ridden horses since before I could walk. I need no such assistance."
Handing Riverwind her staff, Gold Moon threw her arm around the Pegasus's neck and pulled herself astride his broad back. Her silver-gold hair blew feathery white in the moonlight. Her face was pure and cold as marble. Now she truly looked like the princess of a barbarian tribe. She took her staff from Riverwind. Raising it in the air, she lifted her voice in song. Riverwind, his eyes shining with admiration, leaped up behind her on the back of the winged horse. Putting his arm around her, he added his deep baritone voice to hers. Tanis had no idea what they were singing, but it seemed a song of victory and triumph. It stirred his blood, and he would have willingly joined in. One of the Pegasi cantered up to him. He pulled himself up and settled himself on his broad back, sitting in front of the powerful wings. Now all the companions, caught up in the elation of the moment, mounted, Gold Moon's song adding wings to their souls as the Pegasi spread their huge wings and caught the wind currents. They soared higher and higher, circling above the forest. The silver moon and the red bathed the valley below and the clouds above in an eerie, beautiful, purplish glow that receded into a deeper purple night. As the forest fell away from them, the last thing the companions saw was the Forest Master, glimmering like a star fallen from the heavens, shining lost and alone in a darkening land. One by one the companions felt drowsiness overcome them. Tasselhoff fought this magically induced sleep longest. Enchanted by the rush of wind against his face, spellbound by the sight of tall trees that normally loomed over him, reduced to child's toys. Tass struggled to remain awake long after everyone else. Flint's head rested against his back. The dwarf snoring loudly. Gold Moon was cradled in Riverwind's arms. His head drooped over her shoulder. Even in his sleep, he held her protectively. Caramon slumped over his horse's neck, breathing stentoriously. His brother rested against his twin's broad back. Sturm slept peacefully, the lines of pain gone from his face. Even Tanis's bearded face was clear of care and worry. and responsibility.
Tass yawned.
No,
he mumbled, blinking rapidly and pinching himself.
Rest now, little kinder, his Pegasus said in amusement. Mortals were not meant to fly. This sleep is for your protection. We do not want you to panic and fall off.
I won't,
Tass protested, yawning again. His head sank forward. The Pegasus's neck was warm and comfortable. The fur was fragrant and soft.
I won't panic,
Tass whispered sleepily.
Never panic.
He slept. The half-elf woke with a start to find that he was lying in a grassy meadow. The leader of the Pegasi stood above him, staring off to the east. Tanis sat up.
Where are we? He began. This isn't a city.
He looked around.
Why? We haven't even crossed the mountains yet. I am sorry.
The Pegasus turned to him.
We could not take you as far as the East Wall Mountains. There is great trouble brewing in the east. A darkness fills the air. Such a darkness as I have not felt in Kryn for countless.
He stopped, lowered his head, and pawed the ground restlessly.
I dare not travel farther.
Where are we? The confused half-elf repeated. And where are the other Pegasi?
I sent them home. I remained to guard your sleep. Now that you are awake, I must return home as well.
The Pegasus gazed sternly at Tanis.
I know not what awakened this great evil on Kryn. I trust it was not you and your companions.
He spread his great wings. Wait! Tanis scrambled to his feet. What? The Pegasus leaped into the air, circled twice, then was gone, flying rapidly back to the east.
What evil?
Tanis asked glumly. He sighed and looked around. His companions were sleeping soundly, lying on the ground around him in various poses of slumber. He studied the horizon, trying to get his bearings. It was nearly dawn, he realized. The sun's light was just beginning to illuminate the east. He was standing on a flat prairie. There was not a tree in sight, nothing but rolling fields of tall grass as far as he could see. Wondering what the Pegasus had meant about trouble to the east, Tanis sat down to watch the sun rise and wait for his friends to wake. He wasn't particularly worried about where he was, for he guessed Riverwind knew this land down to the last blade of grass. So he stretched out on the ground, facing the east, feeling more relaxed after that strange sleep than he had in many nights. Suddenly he sat upright, his relaxed feeling gone, a tightness clutching at his throat like an unseen hand, for there, snaking up to meet the bright new morning sun, were three thick, twisting columns of greasy black smoke. Tanis stumbled to his feet. He ran over and shook Riverwind gently, trying to wake the plainsman without disturbing Gold Moon.
Hush!
Tanis whispered, putting a warning finger on his lips and nodding toward the sleeping woman as Riverwind blinked at the half-elf. Seeing Tanis's dark expression, the barbarian was instantly awake. He stood up quietly and moved off with Tanis, glancing around him.
What's this?
He whispered.
We're in the plains of Abinacinia. Still about a half-day's journey from the East Wall Mountains. My village lies to the east.
He stopped as Tanis pointed silently eastward. Then he gave a shallow, ragged cry as he saw the smoke curling into the sky. Gold Moon jerked awake. She sat up, gazed at Riverwind sleepily. Then, with growing alarm, turning, she followed his horrified stare.
No,
she moaned.
No,
she cried again. Quickly rising, she began to gather their possessions. The others woke at her cry.
What is it?
Karamin jumped up. Their village. Tanis said softly, gesturing with his hand. It's burning. Apparently the armies are moving quicker than we thought.
No, said Raistlin. Remember, the Draconian clerics mentioned they had traced the staff to a village in the plains.
My people, Gold Moon murmured, energy draining from her. She slumped in Riverwind's arms, staring at the smoke. My father.
We'd better get going. Caraman glanced around uneasily. We show up like a jewel in a gypsy dancer's navel.
Yes, Tanis said.
We've definitely got to get out of here, but where do we go? He asked Riverwind.
Quishu.
Gold Moon's tone allowed no contradiction.
It's on our way. The East Wall Mountains are just beyond my village.
She started through the tall grass. Tanis glanced at Riverwind.
Marulina!
The plainsman called out to her. Running forward, he caught hold of Gold Moon's arm.
Nikpatak, Marilar,
he said sternly. She stared up at him, her eyes blue and cold as the morning sky.
No,
she said resolutely. I am going to our village. It is our fault if something has happened. I don't care if there are thousands of those monsters waiting. I will die with our people, as I should have done. Her voice failed her. Tanis, watching, felt his heart ache with pity. Riverwind put his arm around her, and together they began walking toward the rising sun. Caraman cleared his throat.
I hope I do meet a thousand of those things, he muttered, hoisting his and his brother's packs. Hey,
he said in astonishment,
they're full.
He peered in his pack.
Provisions. Several days' worth. And my sword's back in my scabbard.
At least that's one thing we won't have to worry about, Tanis said grimly.
Are you all right, Stum?
Yes, the knight answered. I feel much better after that sleep.
Right then, let's go. Flint, where's Tas?
Turning, Tanis nearly fell over the kender who had been standing right behind him. Poor Gold Moon, Tas said softly. Tanis patted him on the shoulder.
Maybe it won't be as bad as we fear, the half-elf said, following the plainsman through the rippling grass.
Maybe the warriors fought them off, and there's a victory fires.
Tasselhoff sighed and looked up at Tanis, his brown eyes wide.
You're a rotten liar, Tanis, the kender said.
He had the feeling it was going to be a very long day. Twilight. The pale sun set. Shafts of yellow and tan streaked the western sky, then faded into dreary night. The companions sat huddled around a fire that offered no warmth, for there existed no flame on Kryn that would drive the chill from their souls. They did not speak to each other, but each sat staring into the fire, trying to make some sense of what they had seen, trying to make sense of the senseless. Tanis had lived through much that was horrible in his life, but the ravaged town of Quishu would always stand out in his mind as a symbol of the horrors of war. Even so, remembering Quishu, he could only grasp fleeting images, his mind refusing to encompass the total, awful vision. Oddly enough, he remembered the melted stones of Quishu. He remembered them vividly. Only in his dreams did he recall the twisted and blackened bodies that lay among the smoking stones, the great stone walls, the huge stone temples and edifices, the spacious stone buildings with their rock courtyards and statuary, the large stone arena, all had melted, like butter on a hot summer day. The rock still smoldered, though it was obvious that the village must have been attacked well over a sunrise ago. It was as if a white-hot, searing flame had engulfed the entire village, but what fire was there on Kryn that could melt rock? He remembered a creaking sound, remembered hearing it and being puzzled by it, and wondering what it was, until locating the source of the only sound in the deathly still town became an obsession. He ran through the ruined village until he located the source. He remembered that he shouted to the others until they came. They stood staring into the melted arena. Huge stone blocks had poured down from the side of the bowl-shaped depression, forming molten ripples of rock around the bottom of the dish. In the center, on grass that was blackened and charred, stood a crude gibbet. Two stout posts had been driven into the burned ground by unspeakable force, their bases splintered by the impact. 10 feet above the ground, a crosspiece pole was lashed to the two posts. The wood was charred and blistered. Scavenger birds perched on the top. 3 chains, made of what appeared to be iron, before it had melted and run together, swung back and forth. This was the cause of the creaking sound. Suspended from each chain, apparently by the feet, was a corpse. The corpses were not human, they were hobgoblin. The top of the gruesome structure was a shield, stuck to the crosspiece with a broken sword blade. Roughly clawed on the battered shield were the words written in a crude form of common. This is what happens to those who take prisoners against my commands. Kill or be killed. It was signed, Verminard. Verminard. That name meant nothing to Tanis. Other images. He remembered Gold Moon standing in the center of her father's ruined house, trying to put back together the pieces of a broken vase. He remembered a dog, the only living thing they found in the entire village, curled around the body of a dead child. Caramon stopped to pet the small dog. The animal cringed, then licked the big man's hand. It then licked the child's cold face, looking up at the warrior hopefully, expecting this human to make everything all right, to make his little playmate run and laugh again. He remembered Caramon stroking the dog's soft fur with his huge hands. He remembered Riverwind picking up a rock, holding it, aimlessly, as he stared around his burned and blasted village. He remembered Sturm standing transfixed before the gibbet, staring at the sign. And he remembered the knight's lips moving as though in prayer, or perhaps a silent vow. He remembered the sorrow-lined face of the dwarf, who had seen so much tragedy in his long lifetime as he stood in the center of the ruined village, patting Tasselhoff gently on the back, after finding the Kender sobbing in a corner. He remembered Gold Moon's frantic search for survivors. She crawled through the blackened rubble, screaming out names, listening for faint answers to her calls until she was hoarse, and Riverwind finally convinced her it was hopeless. If there were any survivors, they had long since fled. He remembered standing alone in the center of the town, looking at piles of dust with arrowheads in them, and recognizing them as bodies of Draconians. He remembered a cold hand touching his arm, and the mage's whispering voice, "Tanis, we must leave. There is nothing more we can do, and we must reach Zakhtzoroth. Then we will have our revenge." And so they left Kuishu. They traveled far into the night, none of them wanting to stop, each wanting to push his body to the point of exhaustion so that, when they finally slept, there would be no evil dreams. But the dreams came anyway. Chapter 13. Chill Dawn. Vine Bridges. Dark Water. Tanis felt clawed hands clutching at his throat. He struggled and fought, then woke, to find River Wind bending over him in the darkness, shaking him roughly.
What?
Tanis sat up.
You were dreaming,
the plainsman said grimly.
I had to wake you. Your shouts would draw an army down on us. Yes, thanks,
Tanis muttered.
I'm sorry.
He sat up, trying to shake off the nightmare.
What time is it?
Still several hours till dawn, Riverwind said wearily. He returned to where he had been sitting, his back against the trunk of a twisted tree. Gold Moon lay sleeping on the ground beside him. She began to murmur and shake her head, making small, soft, moaning cries like a wounded animal. Riverwind stroked her silver-gold hair, and she quieted.
You should have wakened me earlier, Tanis said.
He stood up, rubbing his shoulders and neck.
It's my watch. Do you think I could sleep?
Asked Riverwind bitterly.
You've got to,
Tanis answered.
You'll slow us up if you don't. The men in my tribe can travel for many days without sleep,
Riverwind said. His eyes were dull and glazed, and he seemed to stare at nothing. Tanis started to argue, then sighed and kept quiet. He knew that he could never truly understand the agony the plainsman was suffering. To have friends and family, an entire life utterly destroyed, must be so devastating that the mind shrank from even imagining it. Tanis left him and walked over to where Flint was sitting, carving at a piece of wood.
You might as well get some sleep, Tanis told the dwarf. I'll watch for a while.
Flint nodded.
I heard you yelling over there.
He sheathed his dagger and thrust the piece of wood into a pouch.
Defending Kuei Shu.
Tanis frowned at the memory. Shivering in the chill night, he wrapped his cloak around him, drew up his hood.
Any idea where we are?
He asked Flint.
The plainsman says we're on a road known as Sageway East,
the dwarf answered. He stretched out on the cold ground, dragging a blanket up around his shoulders.
Some old highway. It's been around since before the cataclysm.
I don't suppose we'd be fortunate enough to have this road take us into Zaktzaroth.
Riverwind doesn't seem to think so,
the dwarf mumbled sleepily.
Says he's only followed it a short distance. But at least it gets us through the mountains.
He gave a great yawn and turned over, pillowing his head on his cloak. Tanis breathed deeply. The night seemed peaceful enough. They hadn't run into any draconians or goblins in their wild flight from Kuei Shu. As Raistlin said, apparently the draconians had attacked Kuei Shu in search of the staff, not as part of any preparations for battle. They had struck, and then withdrawn. The Forest Master's time limit still held good, Tanis supposed. Zaktzaroth within 2 days. And one day had already passed. Shivering, the half-elf walked back over to Riverwind.
Do you have any idea how far we have to go, and in what direction?
Tanis crouched down next to the plainsman.
Yes.
Riverwind nodded, rubbing his burning eyes.
We must go to the northeast, toward New Sea. That is where the city is rumored to be. I have never been there.
He frowned, then shook his head.
I have never been there.
He repeated.
Can we reach it by tomorrow?
Tanis asked.
New Sea is said to be 2 days' journey from Kuei Shu.
The barbarian sighed.
If Zaktzaroth exists, we should be able to reach it in a day.
though I have heard that the land from here to Newsea is swampy and difficult to travel. He shut his eyes, his hand absently stroking Gold Moon's hair. Tanis fell silent, hoping the plainsman would sleep. The half-elf moved quietly to sit beneath the tree, staring into the night. He made a mental note to ask Tasselhoff in the morning if he had a map. The Kender did have a map, but it wasn't much help, dating as it did before the cataclysm. Newsea wasn't on the map since it had appeared after the land had been torn apart and the waters of Turbidus Ocean had rushed in to fill it. Still, the map showed Zakt-Saroth only a short distance from the highway marked Sageway East. They should reach it sometime that afternoon if the territory they had to cross wasn't impassable. The companions ate a cheerless breakfast, most forcing the food down without appetite. Raistlin brewed his foul-smelling herbal drink over the small fire, his strange eyes lingering on Gold Moon's staff.
"How precious it has become,"
he commented softly,
"now that it has been purchased by the blood of innocence."
"Is it worth it? Is it worth the lives of my people?" Gold Moon asked, staring at the nondescript brown staff dully. She seemed to have aged during the night. Gray circles smudged the skin beneath her eyes. None of the companions answered, each looking away in awkward silence. Riverwind stood up abruptly and stalked off into the woods by himself. Gold Moon lifted her eyes and she stared after him. Then her head sank into her hand and she began to weep, silently. "He blames himself," she shook her head. "And I am not helping him. It wasn't his fault."
"It's not anyone's fault," Tanis said, slowly walking over to her. He put his hand on her shoulder, rubbing out the tenseness he felt in the bunched muscles of her neck. "We can't understand. We've just got to keep going and hope we find the answer in Zakt-Saroth."
She nodded and wiped her eyes, drew a deep breath, and blew her nose on a handkerchief Tasselhoff handed her. "You're right," she said, swallowing. "My father would be ashamed of me. I must remember. I am Chieftain's daughter."
"No,"
came Riverwind's deep voice from where he stood behind her in the shadows of the trees.
"You are Chieftain."
Gold Moon gasped. She twisted to her feet to stare, wide-eyed, at Riverwind. "Perhaps I am," she faltered. "But it is meaningless. Our people are dead."
"I saw tracks,"
Riverwind answered.
"Some managed to flee. They have probably gone into the mountains. They will return, and you will be their ruler."
"Our people, still alive?" Gold Moon's face became radiant.
"Not many. Maybe none now. It would depend on whether or not the Draconians followed them into the mountains."
Riverwind shrugged.
"Still, you are now their ruler." Bitterness crept into his voice. "And I will be husband of Chieftain."
Gold Moon cringed, as though he had struck her. She blinked, then shook her head. "No, Riverwind," she said softly. We've talked."
"Have we?"
he interrupted.
"I was thinking about it last night. I've been gone so many years. My thoughts were of you as a woman. I did not realize."
He swallowed and then drew a deep breath.
"I left Gold Moon. I returned to find Chieftain's daughter."
"What choice did I have?" Gold Moon cried angrily. "My father wasn't well. I had to rule or Lawman would have taken over the tribe. Do you know what it's like, being Chieftain's daughter, wondering at every meal if this morsel is the one with the poison, struggling every day to find the money in the treasury to pay the soldiers so that Lawman would have no excuse to take over? And all the time I must act as Chieftain's daughter, while my father sits and drools and mumbles."
her voice choked with tears. Riverwind listened, his face stern and unmoving. He stared at a point above her head.
"We should get started,"
he said coldly.
"It's nearly dawn."
The companions had traveled only a few miles on the old broken road when it dumped them, literally, into a swamp. They had noticed that the ground was getting spongier and the tall, sturdy trees of the mountain canyon forests dwindled. Strange, twisted trees rose up before them.
A miasma blotted out the sun and the air became foul to breathe.
Raceland began to cough and he covered his mouth with a handkerchief. They stayed on the broken stones of the old road, avoiding the dank, swampy ground next to it. Flint was walking in front with Tasselhoff when suddenly the dwarf gave a great shout and disappeared into the muck. They could see only his head.
"Help! The dwarf!"
Tass shouted, and the others ran up.
"It's dragging me under!"
Flint flailed about the black, oozing mud in panic.
"Hold still!"
Riverwind cautioned.
"You have fallen in death muck. Don't go in after him."
He warned Sturm, who had leaped forward. "You'll both die.
Get a branch."
Caraman grabbed a young sapling, took a deep breath, grunted, and pulled. They could hear its roots snapping and creaking as the huge warrior dragged it out of the ground. Riverwind stretched out flat, extending the branch to the dwarf. Flint, nearly up to his nose in the slimy muck, thrashed about and finally grabbed hold of it. The warrior hauled the tree out of the death murk, the dwarf clinging to it.
"Tanis!"
The Kender clutched at the half-elf and pointed. A snake, as big around as Caraman's arm, slithered into the ooze right where the dwarf had been floundering.
"We can't walk through this."
Tanis gestured at the swamp.
"Maybe we should turn back."
"No time,"
Raceland whispered, his hourglass eyes glittering.
"And there is no other way,"
Riverwind said. His voice sounded strange.
"And we can get through. I know a path."
"What?" Tanis turned to the plainsman.
"I thought you said I've been here."
The plainsman said in a strangled voice,
"I can't remember when, but I've been here. I know the way through the swamp, and it leads to..."
He licked his lips. "Leads to a broken city of evil," Tanis asked grimly when the plainsman did not finish his sentence.
"Zak Tsaroth,"
Raistlin hissed.
"Of course,"
Tanis said softly. "It makes sense. Where would we go to find answers about the staff, except to the place where the staff was given you?"
"And we must go now,"
said Raistlin insistently.
"We must be there by midnight, tonight."
The plainsman took the lead. He found firm ground around the black water and, making them all walk single file, led them away from the road and deeper into the swamp. Trees that he called Ironclaw rose out of the water, their roots standing exposed, twisting into the mud. Vines drooped from their branches and trailed across the faint path. The mist closed in, and soon no one could see beyond a few feet. They were forced to move slowly, testing every step. A false move, and they would have plunged into the stinking morass that lay foul and stagnant all around them. Suddenly, the trail came to an end in dark swamp water.
"Now what?"
Caraman asked gloomily.
"This,"
Riverwind said, pointing. A crude bridge made out of vines, twisted into ropes, was attached to a tree. It spanned the water like a spider web.
"Who built it?"
Tanis asked.
"I don't know," Riverwind said. "But you will find them all along the path, wherever it becomes impassable." I told you Zakzaroth would not remain abandoned,
Raistlin whispered.
Yes, well, I suppose we shouldn't throw stones at a gift of the gods, replied Tanis. At least we don't have to swim.
The journey across the vine bridge was not pleasant. The vines were coated with slimy moss, which made walking precarious. The structure swayed alarmingly when touched, and its motion became erratic when anyone crossed. They made it safely to the other side, but had walked only a short distance before they were forced to use another bridge, and always, below them and around them, was the dark water, where strange eyes watched them hungrily. Then they reached a point where the firm ground ended and there were no vine bridges. Ahead was nothing but slimy water.
It isn't very deep, Riverwind muttered. Follow me. Step only where I step.
Riverwind took a step, then another step, feeling his way, the rest keeping right behind him, staring into the water. They stared in disgust and alarm as unknown and unseen things slithered past their legs. When they reached firm ground again, their legs were coated with slime, all of them gagged from the smell. But this last journey seemed perhaps to have been the worst. The jungle growth was not as thick, and they could even see the sun shining faintly through a green haze. The farther north they traveled, the firmer the terrain became. By midday, Tanis called a halt when he found a dry patch of ground beneath an ancient oak tree. The companions sank down to eat lunch and speak hopefully of leaving the swamp behind them, all except Gold Moon and Riverwind. They spoke, not at all. Flint's clothes were sopping wet. He shook with the cold and began complaining about pains in his joints. Tanis grew worried. He knew the dwarf was subject to rheumatism and remembered what Flint had said about fearing to slow them up. Tanis tapped the kender and gestured him over to one side.
I know you've got something in one of your pouches that would take the chill off the dwarf's bones. If you know what I mean, Tanis said softly.
Oh, sure, Tanis,
Tass said, brightening. He fumbled around, first in one pouch, then another, and finally came up with a gleaming silver flask.
Brandy, Otik's finest.
I don't suppose you paid for it?
Tanis asked, grinning.
I will,
the kender replied, hurt.
Next time I'm there.
Sure.
Tanis patted him on the shoulder.
Share some with Flint. Not too much, he cautioned. Just warm him up.
All right, but we'll take the lead, we mighty warriors.
Tass laughed and skipped over to the dwarf as Tanis returned to the others. They were silently packing up the remains of lunch and preparing to move out.
All of us could use some of Otik's finest,
he thought. Gold Moon and River Wind had not spoken to each other all morning. Their mood spread a pall on everyone. Tanis could think of nothing to do that would end the torture these two were experiencing. He could only hope that time would salve the wounds. The companions continued along the trail for about an hour after lunch, moving more quickly since the thickest part of the jungle had been left behind. Just as they thought they had left the swamp, however, the firm ground came abruptly to an end. Weary, sick with the smell, and discouraged, the companions found themselves wading through the muck once again. Only Flint and Tasselhoff were unaffected by the return to the swamp. Those two had ranged far ahead of the others. Tasselhoff soon forgot Tanis's warning about drinking only a little of the brandy. The liquid warmed the blood and took the edge off the gloomy atmosphere. So the kender and dwarf passed the flask back and forth many times until it was empty, and they were traipsing along, making jokes about what they would do if they encountered a Draconian.
I'd turn it to stone, all right,
the dwarf said, swinging an imaginary battle axe.
Wham! Right in the lizard's gizzard.
I'll bet Raistlin could turn one to stone with a look.
Tass imitated the mage's grim face and dour stare. They both laughed loudly, then hushed, giggling, peering back unsteadily to see if Tanis had heard them.
I'll bet Caramon'd stick a fork in one and eat it, Flint said.
Tass choked with laughter and wiped tears from his eyes. The dwarf roared. Suddenly, the two came to the end of the spongy ground. Tasselhoff grabbed hold of the dwarf as Flint nearly plunged headfirst into a pool of swamp water so wide that a vine bridge would not span it. A huge iron-claw tree lay across the water, its thick trunk making a bridge wide enough for two people to walk across side by side.
Now this is a bridge, Flint said, stepping back a pace and trying to bring the log into focus. No more spider crawling on these stupid green webs. Let's go.
Shouldn't we wait for the others? Tasselhoff asked mildly. Tanis wouldn't want us to get separated.
Tanis, oomph, the dwarf sniffed. We'll show him.
All right,
Tasselhoff agreed cheerfully. He leaped up onto the fallen tree.
Careful,
he said, slipping slightly, then easily catching his balance.
It's slick.
He took a few quick steps, arms outstretched, his feet pointed out like a rope walker he'd seen once at a summer fair. The dwarf clambered up after the kender, Flint's thick boots clumping clumsily on the log. A voice, in the unbrandied part of Flint's mind, told him he could never have done this cold sober. It also told him he was a fool for crossing the bridge without waiting for the others, but he ignored it. He was feeling positively young again. Tasselhoff, enchanted with pretending he was Murgo the Magnificent, looked up and discovered that he did indeed have an audience. One of those draconian things leaped onto the log in front of him. The sight sobered Tass up rapidly. The kender was not given to fear, but he was certainly amazed. He had presence of mind enough to do two things. First, he yelled out loudly,
Tanis, ambush!
Then he lifted his hoopack staff and swung it in a wide arc. The move took the draconian by surprise. The creature sucked in its breath and jumped back off the log to the bank below. Tass, momentarily off balance, regained his feet quickly and wondered what to do next. He glanced around and saw another draconian on the bank. They were, he was puzzled to notice, not armed. Before he could consider this oddity, he heard a roar behind him. He had forgotten the dwarf.
What is it?
Flint shouted.
Draco thingamajiggers, Tass said, gripping his hoopack and peering through the mists. Two ahead, here they come.
Well, confound it, get out of my way!
Flint snarled. Reaching behind, he fumbled for his axe.
Where am I supposed to go?
Tass shouted wildly.
Duck!
Yelled the dwarf. The kender ducked, throwing himself down on the log as one of the draconians came toward him, its clawed hands outstretched. Flint swung his axe in a mighty blow that would have decapitated the draconian if it had come anywhere near it. Unfortunately, the dwarf miscalculated, and the blade whistled harmlessly in front of the draconian, who was waving its hands in the air and chanting strange words. The momentum of Flint's swing spun the dwarf around. His feet slipped on the slimy log, and with a loud cry, the dwarf tumbled backward into the water. Tasselhoff, having been around Raistlin for years, recognized that the draconian was casting a magic spell. Lying face down on the log, his hoopack staff clutched in his hand, the kender figured he had about 1.5 seconds to consider what to do. The dwarf was gasping and spluttering in the water beneath him. Not inches away, the draconian was clearly reaching a stunning conclusion to his spellcasting. Deciding that anything was better than being magicked, Tass took a deep breath and dove off the log.
Tanis, ambush!
Damn!
swore Caramon as the Kender's voice floated to them out of the mist somewhere ahead. They all began running toward the sound, cursing the vines and the tree branches that blocked their way. Crashing out through the forest, they saw the fallen Ironclaw Bridge. Four Draconians ran out of the shadows, blocking their path. Suddenly, the companions were plunged into darkness too thick to see their own hands, much less their comrades.
"Magic," Tanis heard Raistlin hiss. "These are magic users. Stand aside. You cannot fight them."
Then Tanis heard the mage cry out in agony.
"Raist!"
Caramon shouted. "Where?" "Ugh!" There was a groan and the sound of a heavy body thudding to the ground. Tanis heard the Draconians chanting. Even as he fumbled for his sword, he was suddenly covered, head to toe, in a thick, gooey substance that clogged up his nose and mouth. Struggling to free himself, he only enmeshed himself further. He heard Sturm swearing next to him. Gold Moon cried out. Riverwind's voice was choked off, then drowsiness overcame him. Tanis sank to his knees, still fighting to free himself from the web-like substance that glued his hands to his sides. Then he fell forward on his face and sank into an unnatural sleep.
Chapter 14 Prisoners of the Draconians.
Lying on the ground, panting for breath, Tasselhoff watched as the Draconians prepared to carry off his unconscious friends. The Kender was well hidden beneath a bush near the swamp. The dwarf was stretched out next to him, knocked out cold. Tass glanced at him in remorse. He'd had no choice. In his panic, Flint had dragged the Kender down in the cold water. If he hadn't clunked the dwarf over the head with his hoopack staff, neither of them would have surfaced alive. He'd hauled the comatose dwarf up out of the water and hidden him beneath a bush. Then Tasselhoff watched helplessly as the Draconians bound his friends magically in what looked like strong spider webs. Tass saw they were all apparently unconscious, or dead, because they didn't struggle or put up a fight. The Kender did get a certain amount of grim amusement out of watching the Draconians try to pick up Gold Moon's staff. Evidently they recognized it, for they croaked over it in their guttural language and made gestures of glee. One, presumably the leader, reached out to grasp it. There was a flash of blue light. Giving a screeching cry, the Draconian dropped the staff and hopped up and down on the bank, uttering words Tass assumed were impolite. The leader finally came up with an ingenious idea. Pulling a fur blanket from Gold Moon's pack, the Draconian laid it down on the ground. The creature picked up a stick and used it to roll the staff onto the blanket. Then it gingerly wrapped the staff in the fur and lifted it up triumphantly. The Draconians lifted the webbed bodies of the Kender's friends and bore them away. Other Draconians followed behind, carrying the companions' packs and their weapons. As the Draconians marched along a path very near the hidden Kender, Flint suddenly groaned and stirred. Tass clapped his hand over the dwarf's mouth. The Draconians didn't seem to hear, and kept moving. Tass could see his friends clearly in the fading afternoon light as the Draconians passed. They seemed to be sound asleep. Caramon was even snoring. The Kender remembered Raistlin's sleep spell and figured that was what the Draconians had used on his friends. Flint groaned again. One of the Draconians near the end of the line stopped and peered into the brush. Tass picked up his hoopack and held it over the dwarf's head, just in case. But it wasn't needed. The Draconian shrugged and muttered to itself, then hurried to catch up with its squad. Sighing in relief, Tass took his hand off the dwarf's mouth. Flint blinked and opened his eyes.
What happened?
The dwarf moaned, his hand on his head.
You fell off the bridge and hit your head on a log,
Tass said glibly.
I did.
Flint looked suspicious.
I don't remember that. I remember one of those draconian things coming at me, and I remember falling into the water.
Well, you did, so don't argue, Tass said hurriedly, getting to his feet. Can you walk?
Of course I can walk,
the dwarf snapped. He stood up, a little wobbly, but erect.
Where is everybody?
The draconians captured them and carried them off.
All of them?
Flint's mouth fell open.
Just like that?
These draconians were magic users,
Tass said impatiently, anxious to get started.
They cast spells, I guess. They didn't hurt them, except for Raistlin. I think they did something terrible to him. I saw him as they passed. He looked awful. But he's the only one.
The Kender tugged on the dwarf's wet sleeve.
Let's go. We've got to follow them.
Yeah, sure.
Flint mumbled, looking around. Then he put his hand on his head again.
Where's my helm?
At the bottom of the swamp,
Tass said in exasperation.
Do you want to go in after it?
The dwarf gave the murky water a horrified glance, shivered, and turned away hurriedly. He put his hand to his head again and felt a large bump.
I sure don't remember hitting my head,
he muttered. Then a sudden thought struck him. He felt around his back wildly.
My axe!
He cried. Hush!
Tass scolded.
At least you're alive. Now we've got to rescue the others.
And how do you propose to do that without any weapons except that overgrown slingshot?
Flint grumbled, stumping along after the fast-moving Kender.
We'll think of something,
Tass said confidently, though he felt as if his heart were getting tangled up in his feet. It had sunk so low. The Kender picked up the draconian's trail without any trouble. It was obviously an old and well-used trail. It looked as though hundreds of draconian feet had tramped along it. Tasselhoff, examining the tracks, suddenly realized that they might be walking into a large camp of the monsters. He shrugged. No use worrying about such minor details. Unfortunately, Flint didn't share the same philosophy.
There's a whole damn army up there,
the dwarf gasped, grabbing the Kender by the shoulder.
Yes, well.
Tass paused to consider the situation. He brightened.
That's all the better. The more of them there are, the less chance they'll have of seeing us.
He started off again. Flint frowned. There was something wrong with that logic, but right now he couldn't quite figure out what, and he was too wet and chilled to argue. Besides, he was thinking the same thing the Kender was. The only other choice they had was to escape into the swamp themselves and leave their friends in the hands of the draconians, and that was no choice at all. They walked another half hour. The sun sank into the mist, giving it a blood-red tinge, and night fell swiftly in the murky swamp. Soon they saw a blazing light ahead of them. They left the trail and sneaked into the brush. The Kender moved silently as a mouse. The dwarf stepped on sticks that snapped beneath his feet, ran into trees, and blundered through the brush. Fortunately, the draconian camp was celebrating and probably wouldn't have heard an army of dwarves approaching. Flint and Tass knelt just beyond the firelight and watched. The dwarf suddenly grabbed the Kender with such violence that he nearly pulled him over.
Great reorks!
Flint swore, pointing.
A dragon!
Tass was too stunned to say anything. He and the dwarf watched in amazed horror as the draconians danced and prostrated themselves before a giant black dragon. The creature lurked inside the remaining half-shell of a crumbled domed ruin. Its head was higher than the treetops. Its wingspan was enormous. One of the draconians, wearing robes, bent before the dragon, gesturing to the staff as it lay on the ground with the captured weapons.
There's something strange about that dragon, Tass whispered after watching for a few moments.
Like they're not supposed to exist?
That's just the point, Tass said. Look at it. The creature isn't moving or reacting to anything. It's just sitting there. I always thought the dragons would be more lively, don't you know?
Go up and tickle its foot, Flint snorted. Then you'll see lively.
I think I'll do that, the Kender said.
Before the dwarf could say a word, Tasselhoff crept out of the brush, flitting from shadow to shadow as he drew near the camp. Flint could have torn his beard out in frustration, but it would have been disastrous to try and stop him now. The dwarf could do nothing but follow.
Tanis!
The half-elf heard someone calling him from across a huge chasm. He tried to answer, but his mouth was stuffed with something sticky. He shook his head. Then he felt an arm around his shoulders, helping him sit up. He opened his eyes. It was night. Judging by the flickering light, a huge fire blazed brightly somewhere. Sturm's face, looking concerned, was near his. Tanis sighed and reached out his hand to clasp the knight's shoulder. He tried to speak, and was forced to pull off bits of the sticky substance that clung to his face and mouth like cobwebs.
I'm all right, Tanis said when he could talk. Where are we?
He glanced around. Is everyone here? Anyone hurt?
We're in a draconian camp, Sturm said, helping the half-elf stand.
Tasselhoff and Flint are missing, and Raistlin's hurt.
Badly?
Tanis asked, alarmed by the serious expression on Sturm's face.
Not good,
the knight replied.
Poisoned dart, Riverwind said.
Tanis turned toward the plainsmen and got his first clear look at their prison. They were inside a cage made of bamboo. Draconian guards stood outside, their long, curved swords drawn and ready. Beyond the cage, hundreds of Draconians milled around a campfire. And above the campfire...
Yes,
Sturm said, seeing Tanis's startled expression.
A dragon.
More children's stories.
Raistlin would gloat.
Raistlin. Tanis went over to the mage who was lying in a corner of the cage, covered in his cloak. The young mage was feverish and shaking with chills. Goldmoon knelt beside him, her hand on his forehead, stroking back the white hair. He was unconscious, his head tossed fitfully, and he murmured strange words, sometimes shouting out garbled commands. Caraman, his face nearly as pale as his brother's, sat beside him. Goldmoon met Tanis's questioning gaze and shook her head, sadly, her eyes large and gleaming in the reflected firelight. Riverwind came over to stand beside Tanis.
She found this in his neck,
he said, carefully holding up a feathered dart between thumb and forefinger. He glanced at the mage without love, but with a certain amount of pity.
Who can say what poison burns in his blood?
If we had the staff,
Gold Moon said.
Right,
Tanis said. Where is it?
There,
Sturm said, his mouth twisting wryly. He pointed. Tanis peered past hundreds of Draconians and saw the staff lying on Gold Moon's fur blanket in front of the black dragon. Reaching out, Tanis grasped a bar of the cage.
We could break out,
he told Sturm.
Caraman could snap this like a twig.
Tasselhoff could snap it like a twig if he were here, Sturm said. Of course, then we've only got a few hundred of these creatures to take care of, not to mention the dragon.
All right.
Don't rub it in. Tanis sighed. Any idea what happened to Flint and Tass?
Riverwind said he heard a splash just after Tass yelled out that we were being ambushed.
If they were lucky, they dived off the log and escaped into the swamp. If not...
Sturm didn't finish. Tanis closed his eyes to shut out the firelight. He felt tired. Tired of fighting, tired of killing, tired of slogging through the muck. He thought longingly of lying down and sinking back into sleep. Instead, he opened his eyes, stalked over to the cage, and rattled the bars. A draconian guard turned around, sword raised.
"You speak common?"
Tanis asked in the very lowest, crudest form of the common language used on Kryn.
"I speak common. Apparently better than you do, elven scum."
The draconian sneered.
"What do you want?"
"One of our party is injured. We ask that you treat him. Give him an antidote to this poison dart."
"Poison?"
The draconian peered into the cage.
"Ah, yes. The magic user."
The creature gurgled deep in its throat, a sound obviously meant to be laughter.
"Sick, is he? Yes. The poison acts swiftly. Can't have a magic user around. Even behind bars, they're deadly. But don't worry. He won't be lonely. The rest of you will be joining him soon enough. In fact, you should envy him. Your deaths will not be nearly so quick."
The draconian turned its back and said something to its partner, jerking its clawed thumb in the direction of the cage. Both of them croaked their gurgling laughter. Tanis, feeling disgust and rage welling deep up inside of him, looked back at Raistlin. The mage was growing worse. Gold Moon put her hand on Raistlin's neck, feeling for the life beat, and then shook her head. Caramon made a moaning sound, then his glance shifted to the two draconians, laughing and talking together outside.
"Stop, Caramon!"
Tanis yelled, but it was too late. With a roar like a wounded animal, the huge warrior leaped toward the draconians. Bamboo gave way before him, the shards splintering and cutting into his skin. Mad with the desire to kill, Caramon never noticed. Tanis jumped on his back as the warrior crashed past him, but Caramon shook him off as easily as a bear shakes off an annoying fly.
"Caramon, you fool!"
Sturm grunted as he and Riverwind both threw themselves on the warrior. But Caramon's rage carried him on. Whirling, one draconian raised its sword, but Caramon sent the weapon flying. The creature hit the ground, knocked senseless by a blow from the big man's fist. Within seconds, there were six draconians, bows and arrows in their hands, surrounding the warrior. Sturm and Riverwind wrestled Caramon to the ground. Sturm, sitting on him, shoved his face into the mud until he felt Caramon relax beneath him and heard him give a strangled sob. At that instant, a high-pitched, shrill voice screeched through the camp.
"Bring that warrior to me,"
said the dragon. Tanis felt the hair rise on his neck. The draconians lowered their weapons and turned to face the dragon, staring in astonishment and muttering among themselves. Riverwind and Sturm got to their feet. Caramon lay on the ground, choking with sobs. The draconian guards glanced at each other uneasily, while those standing near the dragon backed off hurriedly and formed an immense semicircle around it. One of the creatures, whom Tanis supposed by the insignia on its armor to be some sort of captain, stalked up to a robed draconian, who was staring open-mouthed at the black dragon.
"What's going on?"
the captain demanded. The draconian spoke in the common tongue. Tanis, listening closely, realized they were of different species. The robed draconians were apparently the magic users and the priests. Presumably, the two could not communicate in their own languages. The military draconian was clearly upset.
"Where is that Bozak priest of yours? He must tell us what to do."
"The higher of my order is not here."
The robed draconian quickly regained his composure.
"One of them flew here and took him to confer with Lord Verminard about the staff.
But the dragon never speaks when the priest is not here.
The captain lowered his voice.
My boys don't like it. You better do something quickly.
What is the delay?
The dragon's voice shrieked like a wailing wind.
Bring me the warrior!
Do as the dragon says.
The robed Draconian motioned quickly, with a clawed hand. Several Draconians rushed over, shoved Tanis and Riverwind and Sturm back into the shattered cage and lifted the bleeding Caramon up by the arms. They dragged him over to stand before the dragon, his back to the blazing fire. Near him lay the blue crystal staff, Raistlin's staff, their weapons, and their packs. Caramon raised his head to confront the monster, his eyes blurred with tears and blood from the many cuts the bamboo had inflicted on his face. The dragon loomed above him, seen dimly through the smoke rising from the bonfire.
We mete out justice swiftly and surely, human scum!
The dragon hissed. As it spoke, it beat its huge wings, fanning them slowly. The Draconians gasped and began to back up, some stumbling over themselves as they hurried to get out of the monster's way. Obviously they knew what was coming. Caramon stared at the creature without fear.
My brother is dying, he shouted. Do what you will to me. I ask only one thing. Give me my sword so that I can die fighting.
The dragon laughed shrilly. The Draconians joined in, gurgling and croaking horribly as the dragon's wings beat the air. It began to rock back